Part 2, pre-recording for broadcast of Weekend Edition Mideast Migraines program for a Saturday, August 6th, completion of Chapter 3, Fatal Embrace. History and Memory. Historian and author Tony Yunt is a British Jew who has recently come under attack for his criticism of Israel's policies and, in particular, of the destructive effects of Zionism on Jewish life in the diaspora. Rosenfeld does not miss the opportunity to excoriate Yunt for raising the question of whether the Jewish state as it now exists is the best solution to anti-Semitism, and whether, in fact, Israel's actions may be contributing to anti-Semitism around the world. In a recent Washington Post Newsweek blog, Yute, and his name, by the way, Tony Yute, his last name is spelled J-U-D-T, Yute, or some might say Jute. In a recent Washington Post Newsweek blog, Dute courageously placed the issue of Israel and American Jewish attitudes in the larger contexts of world affairs. He writes, "I see the hysteria surrounding the, quote, Israel issue in American life and the shameful silence about what actually happens in the territories Israel occupies as one more symptom of the provincial ignorance and isolation of the U.S. and world affairs. We can continue assuring ourselves that the whole of the rest of the world is awash in inexplicable, atavistic, exterminationist anti-Semitism. Or, in this as in other matters, we can re-enter an international conversation and ask ourselves why, together with an Israeli political class recklessly embarked on the road to self-destruction, why we alone see the world this way and whether we might be mistaken." End of extraction, 2007. Tony Yute. The author here says, "I agree with you that the need for American Jews to emerge from our historical attitudes of insularity and self-protection is all the more urgent because of the implications of these attitudes for our world at large. As Jews, we can no longer afford to think only of ourselves, seeing ourselves as victims, as a beleaguered minority. This attitude and the behavior it engenders has not only put us at great risk, it adds significantly to the peril of the entire world. If we are indeed to be a, quote, light to the nations, we must make common cause with the forces of progressivism and the advancement of human rights. As Jews, we must be part of the solution. Sadly," and Rosenfeld's essay is but one indication of this fact, "we are still learning how not to be a part of the problem. We are still learning how not to be part of the problem." Sarah Roy's recent book, Failing Peace, Gaza and the Palestinian-Israeli Conflict, is an impassioned plea for an awakening to the moral issues confronting the Jewish people at this juncture in our history. Here's a quote from that work. Sarah Roy. "Why is it so difficult, even impossible, to accommodate Palestinians into the Jewish history of into the Jewish understanding of history? Why is there so little perceived need to question our own narrative, for want of a better word, narrative, and the one we have given others, preferring instead to embrace beliefs and sentiments that remain inert? Why is it virtually mandatory among Jewish intellectuals to oppose racism, repression, and injustice almost everywhere in the world, and unacceptable indeed for some, an act of heresy, to oppose it when Israel is the oppressor? For many among us, history and memory adhere to preclude reflection and tolerance, where, and I quote, the enemy become or becomes people to be defeated, but embodiments of an idea to be exterminated. End of extraction, 2007. Jews understand basic human rights. We feel the moral imperative in our bones. But we are human. We make mistakes. We require correction. This is what the prophets were telling us in ancient times. And this is what our modern prophets are telling us now. Despite the increasingly vigorous protest of the Jewish establishment against even a murmur of opposition to Israel's actions, the voices of conscience within the Jewish community are growing stronger. What we are being forced to see is that we have a distance to travel. We are at one with those historical turning points. We have a choice. For us as Jews, and for all Americans contemplating our relationship to the world at large and to the urgent human rights issues of our day, there can be no more important questions than the ones Roy asks here, and no more chilling conclusion than the one she articulates. The choice of the quote from Northrop Frye with which she closes the passage above is telling. The choice of the word exterminated pointed. I'll read that quote again. Roy's words flowing into Frye's words. For many among us, history and memory adhere to preclude reflection and tolerance, where, quote, the enemy becomes people to be defeated, but embodiments of an idea to be exterminated. As long as we allow our minds to be closed, our voices silenced, and our eyes shut before the injustices and horrors in plain view, there will be more conflict, more dispossession, and the deaths of countless more innocents. And there will be no peace, not in the Middle East, not in our own midst, and not in our hearts. Closing section of chapter 3. Simpler times. I loved my grandmother. She was a sweet woman with a big heart. She brought her large family through the Great Depression and struggled her whole life with the personal legacy of a tyrannical father and the denial of higher education that was her lot as a girl growing up in an ultra-Orthodox household. Most of all, as illustrated by my opening story, she was very much a product of her times and our collective history. Among my many memories of her is a group photograph from the 1950s that hung in her house. In it, my grandmother sits with perhaps 60 other women, all in drab dresses and sensible shoes. Before them is a banner proclaiming the local chapter of Pioneer Women, an American women's Zionist organization founded in the 1920s to promote Jewish culture and Zionist principles and to provide material support for Jewish settlements in Palestine and, after 1948, for the State of Israel. My grandmother looks out from the front row, clearly proud of her affiliation and steadfast in her commitment to the survival of the young state. For her, there were no Palestinians and there was no Nakba. There was only this precious reality of Israel, this wondrous repository of Jewish culture, this bulwark against the nations who seek to destroy us. And he capitalizes all of those letters here. Nations who seek to destroy us. A bulwark against that. Indeed, she was a product of her times. And for the Jews of America, those were simpler times. We don't have the luxury of that simplicity anymore. We are engaged in a struggle to confront the consequences of our current situation and to undertake the difficult work of self-examination and necessary reform. But to do that, we need to reach an understanding of who we have become and how we have come to this pass. There are many facets to that question, but surely one crucial issue is the relationship of Judaism and Zionism. This is the subject of our next chapter. Indeed, there is one more chapter in part one of this book. Part one entitled Breaking the Spell. Chapter four, which I will take up next Saturday when hopefully I'll be back in studio, is entitled A Movement of Hope and Desire. And here is the opening quotation from that chapter 4. The claim of the Jews to the land, tenuously historical, all the more ruthlessly claimed biblically, rests therefore on the unique quality of Jewish self-fashioning, its ability to carve fate into the soil. Quotation by Jacqueline Rose in The Question of Zion. Okay, well, do keep in mind, when you go to my archives at the website radioforall.net, radioforall.net, and type Mideast Migraines into the search box, you will note a number of recent entries which represent most of the period between studio locations are entered in two separate recordings, part one and part two. Now, I happened to divide this one very late in the game. I only had a few pages left to include as part two of the program for Saturday, July 6th. The reason I do that here at home is because I have lost 30 minutes worth of reading because of a computer crash, specifically the recording program that I use crashing, and I'm not able, or I don't understand how to retrieve what I recorded, assuming there's anything of it left, assuming it hasn't just whisked away into the ether. So the last couple of pages you heard would be part two of I'm calling it, it is under the title Fat M for Fatal Embrace, F-A-T-E-M-B, end of chapter 3. So, short episode today. We normally go for a full 2 hours, or close to 2 hours, on the Saturday edition, which comes to you at 11 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, every Saturday at 11 a.m. Pacific. That's the book reading, weekly edition of Mideast Migraines, and my other show, also of the same name, appears before your ears Mondays at 1500 hours, 3 o'clock in the afternoon Pacific. I use that time slot on Free Radio Santa Cruz's schedule of programs to get into hopefully some more recent news and developments in the Middle East. And once in a while, I'll venture out into something that has little or maybe nothing at all to do with Arabs and Jews, with Palestinians and Israelis. After all, variety is the spice of life, is it not? Okay, folks, please consider joining me on Monday at 3 p.m. here on the Pacific Coast, and to continue the book, Fatal Embrace, by Mark Braverman, next Saturday, 11 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Thank you. Till then, do what you can, but behave yourself.